Welcome to After Hours, the abbreviated After Hours. At 10 o'clock, there will be some kind of Game of Thrones special on, but we will get a lot packed into this 1 hour. Many years ago, one of my favorite colleagues at the Tribune was a young writer named Matt Pays, who mostly wrote about movies, but also wrote about a lot of pop culture things. And then one day he wasn't there. Now he is in here. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Rick.
You really were one of my favorite people there. I got to ask you, and I know I probably could anticipate the answer. Why'd you leave the Tribune?
Wow.
Were you looking for, you know, the newspaper business is not the great growth industry of the 21st century. That's part of it.
That, I think most people would agree with that. Yeah. Well, it's great to see you again, Rick.
You too.
That's so incredibly kind of you to say. You know, I was so incredibly lucky to get to spend 11 years walking into Tribune Tower, as so many people who work there have said. The first day, the second day, the 100th day, you sort of pinch yourself. I was so fortunate to get to do that. And eventually, I felt like I had sort of done everything that I was able to do in terms of what I wanted to do there. And it was time for lifestyle a little bit.
One of the other things was you were very fortunate, I think, to get the kind of dream beat, too.
You said it. Yeah. Before I started that role, if someone asked me what job I wanted to do, I said movie critic, and it was true, but did I expect that I would get it as soon as I did in my career? Absolutely not. I did not take that for granted ever. And I was so thankful to have a pretty good following throughout my time there,
no question.
A lot of people who really didn't like me at all. And I think that's when you know you're doing
nature.
Something right.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, look at Mike Royko, for God's sake. People loved him. People hated him. You also got to interview. Yeah, I just think for what you're doing now, and I will tell you what Matt is doing momentarily, but you also interviewed a lot of celebrated people.
I did.
And I've often thought that the interview with celebrities is one of the most difficult because many of them have tape recorders in their heads and they just will spit out the same old answers to the same old questions. But you elevated that form, I think.
Thank you. That was definitely my favorite part of the job. Because I went into every one of those interviews saying, I want the story that comes out of this to be something that nobody else has.
Yeah.
What's the point of just asking the same questions that everyone else asks and getting the same answers? I don't want to read that, and I certainly don't want to live it myself. So that was why I did extensive research. I read everything anyone had ever been asked about the movie they were promoting, that whole thing. That was the most fun, to walk out of an interview setting and say that went exactly the way that I wanted it to.
You mentioned in the fine introduction, I'm not going to tell you what the book is yet, but in his new book, and I think I dare say your first book, right?
You are correct.
He talks about some of his favorite interviews, Brie Larson, Will Ferrell, I can only imagine, Paul Rudd, Channing Tatum. What were some of your worst?
Worst. Well, honestly, the only ones that I didn't like were the ones who, like you said, they have the tape recorder playing in their mind, and no matter what you ask them, they just want to say the stuff that they came to say.
Yeah.
So certainly there were some folks who were saltier than others.
Sure.
I wouldn't be the first one to say that Harrison Ford has feelings.
Harrison
about
Ford has never seemed like the kind of guy I would like to have a beer with.
He was pretty upset about a particular question that I asked him, and then went on to make mention of that.
Like, Mr. Ford, do you think you're stupid? I don't even want to know what the question was. When you decided that your time there, and that you'd gotten all out of that place and that beat, what did you look to do, Matt, for your new career path?
That's a great question, and honestly, I wasn't sure, because I hadn't explored possibilities.
Sure.
In a decade. So I just kind of opened my eyes for the first time, explored other avenues. My background was in journalism. I wanted to continue doing some of the things that I had been doing at Red Eye, continuing to interview people and write a lot, but do it in a different form. So that was what I was starting from.
Can you talk about what you do now?
Yeah, so I work for a financial services association as a content specialist. So I'm still...
See, I don't even know what that means. I'm serious. I don't even know what that means. It has to do with money, I assume.
So our members are financial services professionals. They sell life insurance and work as financial advisors helping people. And I interview them about how they do their jobs so successfully. But it's not driven by the numbers in any way. One of the cover stories I did for our magazine was about what to say and what not to say to people who are grieving.
Oh, interesting.
So it's just really driven by features and people that way.
I get a sense that your new book, your first book, and here's the title, ladies and gentlemen, This Won't Take Long, 100 Very Short Stories of Dangerous Relationships, Impaired Presidents, Frustrating Jobs, and More. I dare say, and you hint at it in your introduction to the book, that it was born of all of a sudden all of your creative energies are going into creating these pieces of critical pieces about movies and interviews with celebrities, that all of a sudden you had some kind of like a critical energy in your head that didn't have any place to go. I mean, is that basically, am I summarizing your introduction?
Yeah, you are definitely onto something there, Rick. First and foremost, I wanted to challenge myself to do this. I'd never done anything like this before.
Had you ever written fiction before?
Maybe a class or two in college like that, but certainly nothing like this, where every morning in a 15-minute window on the bus, I said to myself, I'm going to try to write a new story every single day. And I had a running note on my phone if I had just like a couple words to trigger me for an idea, but oftentimes, it was total improvisation.
You were going to hear more about that after a short commercial break, and I put the arm on Matt to pick and read one of his 100 very short stories for you. Welcome back. Matt Pays, my old friend from the Tribune, left there some time ago after a very, very fine dozen-year career, went into writing for a financial services firm, whatever that is, writing for a magazine for them, but I think still had a creative urge. And so one day you decide you're going to sort of force yourself to write a short story on your way to work, basically, right?
Yeah.
Just as a creative exercise.
Yeah, I just wanted to see what I was capable of, because as we discussed, I had never done anything remotely like this. And honestly, it was like I could scroll aimlessly on social media for that 15 minutes, or I could do something productive.
What did you think of your first story?
It didn't make it to the book.
The book has 100 stories in it, too. It must be really lousy.
It wasn't one of my favorites at all, because the difference between the first two and the last two that I worked on in the period that I was doing this, night and day.
So initially, you realized pretty fast that you had set up a pretty daunting challenge for yourself.
Oh, yeah, because I wanted to mix it up every day. The goal wasn't to have each one be the same. And maybe 30 to 40% of the way through, once I started feeling pretty good about them, that's when I came up with the idea of dividing them into the categories, that being relationships, politics, family, pop culture, work, travel, and miscellaneous. So at that point, each week, I was saying to myself, okay, I want to make sure I'm adding to each of those categories so there's roughly the same amount
in each
category.
That's so interesting. When you would be walking to the bus stop, would you be formulating an idea, or perhaps even the night before, would you be taking notes or a word or a character or something?
Yeah, the night before or on the way to the bus for sure. But sometimes, and I liked having that note where I had some ideas, so if I needed something, I could go back to it. But I also didn't want to only refer to those. Sometimes it was really exciting to say.
You'd let things happen spontaneously, too, or you'd observe something out the bus window or something.
Yeah, sometimes there were ideas that probably came to me 9 seconds before I had to start writing.
I really think, I swear to you, I've never taught anything, but I certainly never taught a creative writing class, but this would be a fascinating exercise for some college's creative writing course. I want you to read a story, Matt Pays.
You got it, Rick.
Set it up.
Well, I'm just going to start with the first story in the book. It's called Rescue Mission. It's from the relationships section. And part of what I like about this story is that a number of people that have read it all interpret it differently.
Oh, fabulous.
They can have arguments about what it's about and what it means. And that was part of what I loved about the challenge is the challenge of writing these really short stories. They're each about 400 to 500 words. They take just a couple minutes to read.
Take it away.
I want them to be dense and sort of like mess with you. You might want to reread them. And it's really just trying to have fun with it. So this is Rescue Mission. The car slowed to a stop about 4 feet past her, just like he'd seen on TV. She pulled open the door to the Civic, newish and benign, and stepped in. "Hiya," he said, overly friendly. Her eyes were all disapproval, but transitioned into a shy smile. "Thanks for stopping." "Course, can't leave a woman on the side of a road like this." The road was like any road, though not isolated. There were occasional shops and restaurants spaced every half mile or mile, many currently open. Nothing that would earn national attention, but places with phones. As he accelerated, he stole a glance at the thighs exposed by her sundress, less dirty than he might have expected, and saw her toying with a knife. He almost swallowed his tongue. "What you got there?" Trying to play it cool, the coach regaining control of the team. "Nothing much. Protection. It looks swiped from someone's kitchen, a few inches long and flimsy enough to snap, maybe, but sharp enough to defend. You're awful pretty, you know. Woman like you shouldn't be out in a place like this, hour like this. Again, nice small town, middle of the day." Though they'd passed outside it by now, in between one civilization and the next. "I can take care of myself, but it sure is nice of you to say so." Something about her accent didn't sound right, but his didn't either. She began running the dull side of the blade along her leg, starting at the knee and rising. He tried to focus on the road, nervous and surprised. "It's my pleasure. Where are you?" They heard a loud pop and a quick rumble. It didn't take an expert to diagnose the loss of stability. He guided the vehicle to the shoulder, dusty and brown. "What was that?" she asked, the accent still there, but the knife no longer moving or wielded. "What do you think?" His was gone. He stepped out of the car, slammed the forest green door, and walked to the passenger side. "Yep, totally busted." "Is it flat?" she called out the window, sing-songy. His upper lip curled, the attempted spice now tainted. "Just stop. You know it is." He walked around the car and returned to their two-person show. "I can't believe you brought a knife." "I was out there for a few minutes before you came. Never know who will show up." "Who's going to show up? Jean from the inn?" She shrugged, laughed, and peered out her window. "So what now? I'm not getting any service." "Me neither." They smiled at each other, spotting the lies. "You want to try it for real? You have the knife and all." She didn't have time to determine if he was kidding before a truck pulled alongside them, beaten up and noisy. "Hey, friend," said a man with big eyes and some teeth. The kind of guy, she thought, perhaps no one would miss. Need a tow?
Love it. Love it. Love it. Now, you must feel... Have you ever missed your bus stop by wanting to stay on the bus and needing to write? You know what I mean? I mean, seriously. I mean, if you are just so grabbed by your own tail... Getting off the bus and moving through the doors might inhibit you. Son.
There were definitely times that I was frustrated that it was my stop. That's for sure.
Yeah, I love that story. One of the things about a book like this, I have it on, it's an ebook, right?
Yes.
And you can order it. What you should do, though, you can go to Matt's website, mattpais.com, and you can get to learn a little bit more about Matt, see what he looks like, and order the book that way. But you can also get it from Kindle and all these other sites, correct?
Yeah, you can just go straight to Amazon, and you don't need a Kindle. It's accessible on any device. So once you grab it on Amazon, that you can read on your phone, computer, anything.
I gotta believe, Matt, that writing 100 short stories, at the beginning of the introduction to the book, Matt writes, "When I open a book of short stories, I think two things. One, short stories are awesome. I'm excited. Two, how much is left in this one? 17 pages? Nope. Don't have time and the attention span for that." In doing this and in writing 100 fine short stories, are you empowered?
Empowered in what way?
To become a fiction writer? To continue? I'm assuming these 100 are the best of some, let's say, 150 that you may have written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote about 130 or so.
What's the next step in the creative writing career of Matt Pais?
That's a good question, Rick. I'm happy that I got to do this exercise. I am working on another book right now. It is very different from this one, so I'm not going to spill quite what that's about yet, but I'm really excited about the project.
Matt, it's great to see you, and it's so fun to see you taking another creative leap. You were a fine, fine newspaper guy.
Thank you so much.
And the book is partly part of a reason for leaving a job like the Tribune, for all the other reasons, is you have a family, and this book is dedicated to my family, a wife and kid, right?
I do, yes. I'm married, I have a son, and definitely one of the things I'm so thankful for about the transition I made a few years ago was having so much more time at home to be
with
them.
That's great. That's great. And now you're obviously not taking a bus anymore, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, we'll see when Matt's new book is out, he will be in here to tell you what it is. Go to his website, Matt Paes, MattPaes.com. We'll take a commercial break, then get some news and talk about a new and provocative, chilling, and hopeful podcast.